when we're not honest, our heart rate changes and adrenaline and, you know, the iris of the eye, all of that. So they actually are transparent to one another. And just hanging out with them, surviving storms, we have all this innate knowledge that Emerson called the oversoul. We almost share genetically, but never tested, never used in the push-button society, you know, where everything's remote control and lower 48. But you get up there, and you're in these life-and-death challenges, and you just rise to the occasion with knowledge that you didn't even know that you had. So I kind of like living that way. I don't have a death wish, but I like being in that area where, you know, every day is sort of a year's worth of growth, and that certainly happened on the island.
Michael, how spiritual are you, and did you become more spiritual during your 18 months alone, so to speak?
Yes, and especially hanging out with the Native people. They are, and up there in British Columbia and Alaska, they've never been conquered by the white man like they were in the lower 48. And they fought some wars with the Russians, who originally owned Alaska. But these are people that have lived free. They still have their heritage intact. Then they've been up there for at least 10,000 years. So to see them and gain their trust to the point where they started imparting their knowledge, and they were almost telepathic with each other. They could communicate even without speaking. And when you live that close to nature and you're breathing pure air, you're drinking pure water, when the light has a purity, when the oxygen that you're breathing, in fact, everybody calls Alaskan air champagne air because you can get drunk or giddy because you're getting an overload of oxygen there. And it's like the trees and the plants are giving us this pure oxygen to breathe, whereas everywhere else, a lot of the vegetation is compromised with our pollution and toxicity. But you're in that pure state up there. And when you wake up in the morning, you're breathing, the ocean's breathing, the wind and the trees and the whales. It's all one breath. It's like you're moving through a meditation the whole day. It's just a magical place.
You bring up a good point. You just mentioned whales. I'd like you to talk about your most frightening experiences and encounters with grizzlies and orcas.
Grizzly bears twice in my life. I've been 5 yards away.
Oh, my God.
And first time, so I have a native teacher up there named Lucy. And it's interesting that the word Lucy means lucid or light, and that she is. Every time she speaks, a pearl of wisdom comes out. One time we were talking, I go, Lucy, what do I do? You know, and at first I wanted to carry a gun, and all the old timers up there said, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Not to shoot the bear, but to shoot yourself. Because no gun is going to stop a grizzly bear.
No, unfortunately.
You know, 9 feet tall and weighs over 1,000 pounds. Oh. It can run 50 yards in 3 seconds faster than a human being.
Right, so you're just going to tick them off.
So I'm talking to Lucy, and I go, what do I do? Because sooner or later, I'm going to run into a bear. I mean, you know, just being right out here with them, surround. I see footprints everywhere, and piles of manure. And she goes, okay, this is what you do. If you ever feel threatened, you should sing to them.
Go, really? Sing?
He goes, Michael, they're not going to understand your words, of course, but the melody of your song might calm them down. It might shift their focus. So I kind of tucked that in the back of my mind. One day I'm hiking along the salmon stream, and that's when the bear is most active, when the salmon are running in late August. And I made a big mistake. I came around a big boulder. I kind of made a 90-degree turn into a blind turn. Whenever you're alone out there hiking in bear country, you should talk out loud. You should clap your hands every couple minutes or wear a bear bell, a little jingle bell. It just clinks and clanks with every step you take. That way, if a bear is ahead of you on the trail, it hears you coming, steps off the trail, and there's no danger.
Right.
But I was so into the beauty of that day, and it just was so magical, and the sound, the poetic, you know, riffling of the stream. So I was quiet too long.
Michael, can you hold that thought? Because we have to take a break.
We're going to be right. Bills. You're going to leave us hanging here, but yeah, we're going to come right back.
This is like the old time serial movies in the movies. We'll leave you hanging, folks, and we'll be right back on WMEX 1510 from Marina Bay.
Call Jim and Nancy at 617-237-1234. This is the WMEX Fireside Radio Network.
Do you need a few laughs after a tough week? Then why not stop by Dick Doherty's Comedy Den? For over 26 years, Dick Doherty's Comedy Den has been one of Boston's premier comedy clubs, featuring national headliners and Boston's next super talents. Dick Doherty's Comedy Den is Boston's only full-service comedy club, featuring great food, drinks, and shows at great prices. Dick Doherty's Comedy Den is located just below Howl at the Moon. You can find it at 184 High Street, directly across from Rose Wharf in Boston. Check out our website at dickdoherty.com or give us a call at 800-401-2221. Dick Doherty's Comedy Den. Why not stop by for a few laughs? Remember, you have to be 18 or older to get in.
Thinking of buying a new home? Our friends at Exit Seacoast Realty can help. Call Morella McDonough at 978-412-8220. From getting you pre-approved to financing, we can help you find the right home for you and your family. 978-412-8220. Exit Seacoast Realty. Reinventing real estate. Listening to Fireside with Jim and Nancy on the WMEX Fireside Radio Network.
Good morning, everybody. We are having a great conversation about the wilds of Africa and
Alaska.
And Alaska and a man that lived for 18 months on his own. Nancy, want to?
Well, so we're in the middle of your story, Michael. You're enjoying nature and not thinking about grizzlies. So take it off. On.
So take it off. Around the corner.
Take it off. Watch out for Nancy. She's a cougar.
It's that book you wrote, Michael. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, we got to get to that. Now.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, she will for sure, Michael.
Go ahead, Michael.
So I come around this huge boulder, salmon stream, and the river is moving so fast that it's making a lot of, I wouldn't call it white noise, but it almost was that. I mean, white noise is sort of a derogatory term, but I mean, it was just filling your ears with this beautiful, you know, poetry of the river. So I couldn't hear any footfalls ahead of me. And again, I was too silent. I wasn't giving a bear, if there was a bear around the corner, any advance notice. So sure enough, I make the turn into that blind turn around that boulder, and there's a grizzly bear coming down the hill. If I had been a second faster, we both would have bumped into each other. That's how close we were. So the bear slammed on the brakes. Any animal, if it's a kitty cat at home, a dog, a horse, when they lay their ears flat against their head, that means they are PO'd and they're coming out. Not only did the bear lay the ears flat, but the last thing they do before they attack is they clack their jaws. And they give you what they call the cowboy walk. It's sort of this bow-legged, stiff walk, like, and all the fur swells up, so they puff up like another third of their size. And as I mentioned, they can be 1,000 pounds or more. Well, I don't know why. I remembered Lucy's hint because I didn't have pepper spray. I didn't have a gun.
Oh, God.
And I remembered her hint to sing.
What did you sing?
You've got a split second. You've got a split second to pull up a song from your internal iTunes. I mean, you don't even have time to think. And to make matters worse, when you're that afraid, at least in my case, my mouth went to cotton. And, you know, I couldn't even, my mouth was so dry. But why did this song come out? From a drunken karaoke night back in college. A Neil Diamond song.
Sweet Caroline.
But I'm looking at this grizzly bear 5 yards away, and I'm singing, if you can call it that. Sweet. You don't bring me flowers. You don't sing me love songs anymore. The bear crashed away in pain. It worked better than a gun.
He didn't like your singing.
What's funny is a month later, I actually was by a cyber cafe, and I sat down, and I sent Neil Diamond an email, and I said, "Dear sir, your music saved my life," and I never heard back from him.
Well, I guess it did.
But I mean, you know, it was something so out of the blue. And hearing that human voice, I'm in the worst singer in the world. I can peel the paint off the shower or whatever. And, I mean, he just tore off the side of the trail.
Oh, my God.
So sing to the bears if you're in trouble.
Well, I guess it works because usually when they get after somebody, they don't let go, do they, when they get PO'd enough?
No, grizzlies attack.
Every bear is so different. They're just like people.
Really?
And I mean, they will attack under two conditions. Then that was one of them. If you surprise them suddenly, and then the second condition is the old maternal instinct. When there's a mother with cubs, the mother is just TNT waiting to go off. If you put your hand in your pocket or make a bad move toward one of the babies.
Would the third one be if they were starving?
Yeah, that would also be. Like with any animal that might be rabid or their teeth get ground down or they're not their normal healthy self.
Right.
You know?
Wow, Michael. What did you do afterwards?
You know what, you guys? Like if we have nine lives like a cat, I'm down to about one and a half. You
know? But what a life, Michael.
Oh.
Michael, I got to ask you something. And all the ladies here, Julie Rose and my wife, Nancy, have been waiting with bated breath for this. They want to know, how did you get to be Cosmo's Bachelor of the Month?
Well, this is my crazy life.
I wish I had that kind of life.
It is La Vida Loca. Here I am. I'm living in the wilderness, you know, in this remote island, studying the animals, immersing myself in solitude, where I actually lost my ability to speak when human beings came by. And, you know, I was just reverting back to sort of being primal man or Sasquatch. But I wrote my first book about all the experiences on Swanson Island, and I got very lucky. I mean, I was so ignorant and dumb about it that probably created momentum. HarperCollins, one of the biggest publishers in the world in New York City, decided to publish my first book. And I mean, that rarely happens that, you know, a big house will pick up an unknown author, and they published the book.
It wasn't luck. It was talent.
It was talent, and it was serendipity and meant to happen.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Michael.
Yeah. So now, you know, I'm seeing all these dots connect, meeting Genevieve, the sailboat, you know, on the island, and then, you know, HarperCollins and Cosmo. And it just is phenomenal, you know, to go along this path. And so long story short, for reasons I will never figure out, I guess it's because the nerdy scientists develop sort of the Tarzan body while living in Alaska. And women have told me, especially when I was going through the Cosmo experience, when you take someone who is a scientist or has a life of the mind and the spirit, and you wrap them in sort of this muscular package, that can sometimes be catnip to women. He's kind of put Revenge of the Nerds with, you know, in a himbo package. And that's kind of what happened, where I can actually sit down and have a conversation rather than most men not being able to talk or not be able to listen. And I have that curiosity of the scientist and then, you know, the physicality that Alaska brought out. But to this day, I never really know why they chose. I did find out later from one of the editors, but... So I have no dates for over, like, 2 years living on this wilderness island. Cosmopolitan magazine makes me Mr. November. I go back to New York City to do publicity for the first book that's being published. I find out all about this bachelor business. My agent says, dude, Sigmund Freud once asked what the women really want.
Yeah, you we
got
know.
A shot at finding out. The letters are rolling in, the naked pictures. He said, study these women like you study the wildlife in Alaska. Leave your emotions out of it. Do it from the scientific method. Of course, that went out the window on the first page.
Yeah, I bet it did.
That's why I called this the latest book, Wild Life. It's a double meaning.
Yes.
Two words meaning wild. The life is wild, and then also studying, you know, this cross-section of females mm-hmm. is if they were wildlife. Because we all are human animals, you know, underneath the high-tech that we surround ourselves with.
You received 4,000 letters.
Is that right, Michael, 4,000?
Is that true?
I think it was about five.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, five,
Alaska
sorry.
Alaska Men Magazine got wind of this, mm-hmm. and they called me up and said, how would you like another 1,000 letters? Mm-hmm. We want to make you our centerfold story.
Did you
and
pose?
I mean, my whole life was just too crazy, so I posed with my parka on, but I got a staple through my navel, you know?
That's a song.
A staple through your navel. And the
well,
how
I mean, it was crazy.
5,000 letters.
5,000 letters, Michael. How many of the 5,000 women did you either talk to on the phone or actually meet, if any?
Oh, I responded back to probably 3/4 with, you know, postcard, letter. I dated probably, and this happened in the 1990s, and it went on through a lot of that decade. So
what a lucky man you are.
I dated quite